What's up? Welcome back. This is Seth with SethPro.com. I'm an executive function coach out of Boulder, Colorado. I help struggling students navigate this thing called school. And today we are on the Executive Function Summit. We have our next person, Dr. Roseanne Kapana-Hodge. Did I say your name correctly, Dr. Roseanne?
You did it perfectly, Seth.
And she is a licensed, an LPC, a licensed professional counselor, a certified integrative medicine mental health provider. I'll talk about that. A board certified neurofeedback provider, certified school psychologist. She's been working with kids for about 30 years. And what she does is she uses non-traditional, more holistic, more integrative techniques to help students with executive function and with other things. So what I really like about what she does is she does a lot of what I talk about in dealing with what's beneath the tip of the iceberg. Oftentimes as parents and teachers, we see what's the tip of the iceberg. We see the homework battles, the missings, the zeros, the lates, the incompletes, the messy bedrooms, the lacking responsibility. But what is going on beneath the surface? And what I'm trying to do with my work isn't just give executive function strategies and skills and stuff like that, but we have to address what's going on beneath the surface. Now, I look at it my way. She looks at it very differently and the same, but we may use different words to look at the same thing. But she looks beneath the surface. And parents, I cannot tell you how important it is to really look beneath the surface, because that's what we can really do something about. Those, in my opinion, are the things that matter in terms of the big picture of life. We're trying to give our kids what they need to have a great life. We have to address this. So she does this with holistic and integrative techniques. Some of you may be in a community where that stuff is considered woo-woo or weird. I want you really to listen to this and have an open mind and take this in, and then make your determination on what you think about this stuff. So, is that a good little introduction there, Dr. Roseanne?
I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Except we should be saying proven holistic therapies.
Proven, because they're not woo-woo. They're evidence-based.
They're evidence-based. They've been relegated to woo-woo because that's the way we have a medical model with addressing mental health issues, right? So attention executive functioning falls under mental health. I don't know if it necessarily have to. A lot of times it's genetics, it's physical, whatever the result is. But the therapies that I use are all proven evidence-based technologies that are highly effective.
Cool. So we'll get deep into that. Right now, can you tell us what are we going to learn in the next hour or so?
Yeah. So, you know, really what we're going to talk about are ways that we can use evidence-based holistic therapies to reverse our executive functioning difficulties. And I'm going to really dig deep into sort of the platform, as I like to call it, of healing, but it's really a platform to really get a 360 reversal on your issues, regardless of what the issue is. That's where we're going to spend some time. And really to understand, you know, what happens to somebody with executive functioning issues, what's happening at school, what's happening at home, and, you know, what can we do to kind of alleviate some of those difficulties.
Cool. And I want to dive into some background about you to sort of set the stage for this talk so people can get as much of it as possible. And what I want to start out with in terms of background is not professional, but personal. Who are you? What are you into? What do you like to do for fun, or what? Who are you? Just not professionally, just as
Well, I like to have fun all the time, and I'm usually organizing the fun, just so everybody knows. So I'm a mom of two kids, both with special needs. My older son has chronic Lyme disease, and it impacts his attention and executive functioning in particular. And my little guy, who is probably one of the most pleasant, easiest children in the world, and I understand why people have six children after having him. He has dyslexia, but he's not stopped by that. Neither of my kids. But I, you know, I'm somebody who is very social. I have wonderful friends. I enjoy cooking, and I'm paleo. I live a very holistic lifestyle. I don't just say this is what you should do. This is something that I have grown up with. I'm a daughter of Italian immigrants. This was part of my lifestyle. And as you move forward in your own healing journey, and your children's healing journey, you move towards this more holistic piece, because that's what you need to do in order to get your child optimize their brain, give them the best life possible. And I know there's a lot of other families that do that. So, and I love hanging with my special needs mamas because they are the best. Not that the dads aren't, but we just connect in a way where, you know, you want to get something done, you ask a mama. So that's me.
Right on. And you're in the Northeast?
I'm in the Northeast, and we'll talk more about it, but I work with people not just all over the U.S., but from different countries. People fly into our center.
So tell us about your professional background a little bit. You don't have to tell us all the details, but professionally, you wear a lot of hats, and you've studied a lot of things. You remind me of myself of that. You seem like a total super nerd who just wants to get your hands on
total full on geek all the time. I learn every day. There is not a day that I am not doing a training, listening to a podcast, reading. You know, this is what has to happen. So, you know, my background is being a psychologist was a calling for me. I didn't even understand what being a psychologist was. And I was a very young child. And I used to say that's what I wanted to be. And so here I am. And I actually started working at 20 years old in psychiatric hospitals. And so I have a lot of different kinds of experiences working with, you know, addicts, children, working in schools, private practice. I'm an author. I've done speaking. But I really, what I learned over all this time, and I've always taken what we consider complex cases, which are the norm. All it is layered cases. People typically don't come in with a straight case of ADHD. There's often like some anxiety with it or a gut issue or just layers. And so I just am such a positive person, and I'm, you know, as a practitioner, I believe there is a way to better everything. And that's why I use the tools that I do, because they're very effective. So over time, you really had to not just learn mental health. You had to spend time learning medical and integrative medicine and incorporate all those pieces, because we talk about mind, body, spirit connections. But in our field of mental health, it is an absolute dinosaur. And they are really stuck in this medical model and even more so entrenching in that. And practitioners are moving away from the idea that, you know, oh, you have ADD. Guess what? You can actually do something called executive functioning training and get a lot further than you can from a pill. So in my professional work, that is really what I have embraced, is not just getting the brain online with these beautiful, highly effective, proven therapies like neurofeedback and biofeedback. It is to incorporate it with new learning. So, you know, whether that's executive functioning or social skills or anxiety training to learn coping skills, really, really, really important. So that's who I am as a professional.
And then I want to ask about what is your superpower in terms of helping these families. So a family comes to you, how do you help them specifically? If I'm a parent right now and I'm saying, Dr. Roseanne, how can you help me?
Yeah. So I'd say my superpower is pretty easy. I mean, I have a lot of superpowers. I'm a special needs mom. We have a lot of superpowers. But I would say my biggest superpower is that I check under the hood. And in mental health, they have accepted that they're going to guess. When they think there's a problem, hey, sounds like a little ADD. You're having a hard time focusing. Let me give you this Ritalin or Concerta or whatever it is. Well, that's just a silly notion. There are lots of ways, things that could be impacting your attention. So what I do is something called a QEG brain map. I'm going to pull one up and show you it. And it's a way for me to get a visual representation of what is going on in the brain. And this is somebody actually who has executive functioning difficulties in the frontal lobe. And so this beautiful brain map answers a lot of diagnostic questions. Aside from that, people can also do things like lab work. We now have testing that can look at neurotransmitters. all different aspects, nutrient deficiencies. There's a lot of reasons why somebody would have anxiety per se, or depression, or executive functioning. So my superpower is really identifying what the issue is and then prescribing the right treatment. And it's typically treatments. It's not a one-stop shop in the world.
Right. We were talking about that in the pre-interview, that usually that it's not some simple thing. Mm-hmm. Like when my work takes months, and people want, we live in a culture that, you know, we're bombarded with messages about this thing will fix this thing, you know, whether it's commercials that we're watching or whatever. But there's a lot going on that needs to be addressed if we are to really truly serve kids and help them with whatever their struggles are.
Yeah. I mean, these things didn't happen overnight. It's not going to fix overnight. So, you know, with attention issues, it is actually very easy for me to get the brain, and with neurofeedback in particular, not that I don't use other therapies, and I do different kinds of neurofeedback, and there is no one that is better than the other. It is the experience of the practitioner, and it's what each person needs. But I can get the brain attentive pretty darn easily with neurofeedback. That's not the issue. The issue is, what are you going to pair it with? What new learning is going to occur? Because what I try to explain to people, if you've spent 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, 50 years being inattentive, and all of a sudden your brain is attentive, they don't know what to do. How do you know what to pay attention to? How do you know how to put, think about the big picture, right? So in executive functioning, you always want to start with the end product and really future think and then work backwards. When you start with a checklist, they don't understand what it's for. They never connect the dot. So these are the things that you do in executive functioning training, which is so important. So few in my field, so few practitioners do. And, you know, you can talk all you want about paying attention. It's teaching skills. Yeah. And so it's really, really important for families to realize that it can be taught and it's a process. And no, there's not an explicit timeline. It doesn't matter if you're dyslexic and you're getting a dyslexic reading program, or you have social skills and you need deficits and you need social skills training. That person is going to respond to it in the way they need to respond to it. And I always say healing is never easy or convenient. And it's requires some effort, but it's so worth it. These kind of things can just change the course of somebody's life.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to do. That's what you're trying to do, is literally change the course of their life. Mm-hmm. That's why we do this. Yeah, it reminds me. So my model, basically, I talk about foundations, implementation, and sharpening the sword. So I'll teach students some of the foundations of, you know, I'm really working more with academic type of things and how to navigate school, but they have to have a foundation. Absolutely. Of system skills, mindsets, habits, and then they can start implementing them. So that it's almost like a lot of times we give them a thing, but we don't help them learn to implement and flex that muscle multiple times to really get good at the thing, and then sharpen the sword once they're good at it, but or even decent at it. But cool. So now, for those who are watching, we will get into what neurofeedback is and some of these terms that we're using here. But before we get to that, why does this matter to you? What's the story?
Oh, here's my story. I have, like I said, I've always helped kids, or, you know, I work with all ages, but about 65% of our practice is kids. And yes, we take some simple cases, but again, as this time has passed in these almost 30 years, all my cases have become increasingly layered. You know, 54.2% of children in the U.S. have a physical or a mental health problem. That's with 2011 data. That's pretty shocking. So that is a huge part of what motivates my work. But how I actually, even though I was always practicing holistic methodologies, how I got involved in neurofeedback is a beautiful raging case of ADHD, and his name was Alec. And he came to me, and he had the worst case of attentional difficulties I had ever seen in my life. In any type of you name it, in any geographic location, economic, whatever, this kid to this day has the worst case of ADHD. If I turned away, he would literally be climbing the walls. I mean, it was pretty, pretty extreme. And, you know, he had a lot of opportunity in his life, and he would go to, he was kicked out of two different private schools, and I went to go observe him in a public school. And so I did an evaluation of him. It was really, really challenging for me to evaluate him because he couldn't even pay attention for seconds, but he was off the charts brilliant, right? So many of our kids with focus issues are so brilliant, but their output is so struggling. Mm-hmm. And that was Alec. So his mom put him on ADD meds, and he had cardiac difficulty, so he had to come off, and she was almost hopeless. I mean, he was at almost practically a 0% functioning. And she called me one day and she said, do you know about neurofeedback? And should I do it? And I said, it's a fantastic, highly research-based treatment with thousands of research studies. Go and do it. So she did. And I happened to see them out in town, and he came up to me and he looked me in the eye and he shook my hand and he said, how you doing, Dr. Roseanne? And I turned to his mom and I said, what did you do? Like, what medication are you on? And she said, that's neurofeedback. And that just changed my world. And from that point on, I mean, this was so many years ago. He's an adult now. He wound up coming back to me, and he graduated high school at age 16. He became the exact opposite of a ridiculously hyper kid who would have probably been diagnosed with autism or bipolar because he just couldn't fit into a category. And, you know, once he had clarity in his thinking, he really explained that he just couldn't focus on anything because so many thoughts were coming through his head at the same time. And he just was so overstimulated and couldn't respond. But he's a lovely human being. He's, you know, successful in all the right ways, right? So he's happy and well-adjusted, the most important thing. But, you know, he did amazing at college. He graduated. He's, you know, got a job in a wonderful relationship. You know, what you want for your kid. That would not have been his path. His mother saved his life. So that is why I do what I do, and he's the perfect example.
Because that thing happened, and it's just, that was a game-changing experience for you.
Game changer. And yeah. And that his story is, while he's the most extreme case of ADHD, mm-hmm. is something that I have the privilege of being part of every day, watching people reverse their issues. So I love that. So that's why I do what I do, because, you know, this is not easy for me to be pushing the limits for all these years in my field. And it's easy to help people, but the professional part of things, it's been very, very slow to change. It is changing in the last few years in particular because of such a rise in mental health issues in children that we now all agree we can't continue with this path. So what's so exciting is parents are like, enough. They are demanding something different. They are seeking it out. And the internet has been a wonderful resource for people to find information, find providers. And so they're going to break the system. That's what's going to happen. So,
and understand that there are so many different approaches too.
So many different
approaches.
It
can be really overwhelming, but there are so many ways that we can work with these things.
I mean, and not just actual treatments and things that we do, but also different educational environments, right? My kids, mm-hmm. I homeschooled them for a long time, mm-hmm. and now they go to a very different type of school. They go to a democratic process school. It's very hands-on. You know, silly things were so important to my kids. My kids need to have snacks, right? Their brain doesn't work the same unless they're having snacks, but yet, in our public school, you know, there was a designated snack time, and unless you had a written note from your doctor, you were not getting it.
Right.
So as silly as that was, it was such an important part for my kids' education that, you know, that wasn't the only reason we moved them. My kids are different kinds of thinkers, if you could imagine where they get it from. And, you know, in their current school, they can have a snack any time of day except science and art. You know, I mean, just those little things to – you know, help people's brains be stimulated, not be penalized for being different. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot out there in the world, and people should feel empowered to be able to make those choices if they can.
And I'm going to ask one final question in the intro before we really start getting sure. into the meat of it. And so this is the Executive Function Summit to help parents who have a kid who's struggling with executive function. And so many people who are coming to this are coming to this really, executive function is brand new to them. The, mm-hmm. all they know at this point is it's an important thing to understand because it's interfering with my kid's ability to navigate school and life. So how do you... Mm-hmm. define executive function in one sentence, and then you can unpack it a little bit. But if you were to really give us a one sentence overview and then give us a little bit more of a definition, how would you go about that?
Well, that's easy for me because I do it pretty much every day, multiple times a day. Executive functioning is as simple as this. It's the job manager of the brain, and the job manager is in charge of the rest of the brain. That's really what it is.
Awesome. And,
yeah.
And unpack that for us now. So what's the job manager managing?
Yeah. So back to my brain, right? Here's your frontal lobe. So there's executive functioning is here in your frontal lobe. So our brain.
Just to describe, put your picture a little bit closer. When she says the frontal lobe, you're seeing the nose on top and the ears on the side. This is a top-down view just for those who don't know.
So here's the top. And so our brain is broken into regions, and everybody agrees on that in psychology and medicine. And our frontal lobe is that job manager. And so
the front part here.
Yeah, the front part here. And that job manager, he or she, is in charge and has a role in every single function of the brain. So not just the regions, but actually the little sub areas, and actually is related to how each site communicates to each other.
So what do you mean function? It's in charge of, what does that mean? In charge
function,
of
function. So we have little roles, right? So one part of the frontal lobe may be switching your attention. Your temporal lobes have a lot to do with emotions. So if your executive functioning in your frontal lobes is not working properly related to emotions, it means that your brakes don't come on in the same way. So you can have a Ferrari, right? And you don't have brakes. Or you run out of gas too, which happens all the time with people with ADD. You know, it doesn't matter how good the structure is. So that executive functioning has such a key role of telling each part of the brain, hey, your Mrs. Smith is coming on or coming out, and she's going to give you some multiplication, and you're going to then have to use that multiplication and then go to division. You better pay attention. You better listen. You better put things in order. So it really dictates and controls every part of the brain and really helps a person, not just in the academic world, but at home, right? You know, so many kids with ADD have struggled with just getting out the door in the morning, right? Why? It requires a bunch of things that we, with good attention and executive functioning, think is not a big deal, but it's a lot of steps.
Right.
And so they're struggling with those pieces. Well, that brain, you know, your brain, that job manager is the one that's dictating, and there's a lot of different roles that it takes with areas. So just because, like, people say, oh, gee, you have just ADD, you know, you have executive functioning. It's a big deal because every area of the brain can be affected. It's not just the frontal lobes. It's working collaboratively with all the jobs of the brain that we do all the time.
Cool. I want to break down that one just a little bit because I think that's a great one in terms of getting out the door in the morning. So in order to get out the door in the morning, we just do what we need to do. We're out the door. But for a kid who's struggling with executive function, they have to be thinking through all of the steps.
Right.
And they're not. They're not able to juggle that many steps. So there's getting your shoes on, getting the jacket, getting your keys, getting your backpack, making sure you've got your homework into your backpack if it's still on the desk, double checking the bedroom to make sure you're not forgetting anything, looking at the clock, grabbing breakfast, or sitting down eating a slow breakfast. So there are all of these things, and we take it for granted because for us it's just really easy. But what you're saying is we have to understand that this manager has to be telling the brain tracking all of these different things to execute these tasks to do the one task of getting out the door.
Right. And you know, their manager is on a coffee break. So you're asking them to get out the door when there's really nobody there running the show. And so a big part of the problem is, you know, even getting out the door, they're so stuck in the little parts of the task, they don't get. Getting out the door means I get to the bus, I get to school, right? And so, and then what do? A lot of times they let their parents be their frontal lobes, and their job managers. And there's no fault in that. You know, there's, their parents are doing whatever they can. Yeah. You know, they come to people like you and I to learn a different way. Because what happens is when we become the frontal lobes of our children, it damages our relationship over time. Mm-hmm. We get really irritated. Like, what do you mean your 3-year-old brother can do that? You know? And so I so get that as mom and just as a provider. And, you know, it's really, really hard on both parties because the person who's struggling with executive functioning is like, what are you talking about? And the parent is like, what do you mean? What am I talking about? But, you know, and, you know, I try to present everything from a brain perspective. I think when you understand, you know, okay, the brain's not alerting. The brain is processing on a delay. You know, I can see when somebody has a secondary auditory processing issue. So even though they may have a primary executive functioning issue, their processing on the auditory side may be completely delayed. So sometimes even just alerting them and giving them a 1 or 2, 3 second timeline to alert can be a complete change in the household.
I do a lot of that too.
Yeah.
A lot of advanced warnings about what's coming up.
So important.
So what you just said, it was really interesting because I get a lot of emails, I'm sure you do too, where when a parent starts finding out what executive function is, I have a lot of emails that will say, I'm learning about executive function. I'm realizing that I am my kid's
executive function. Right.
Yeah. And then they say the second thing that you mentioned, which is, and this is interfering with our relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's so important to so many parents.
Yeah.
To not just do this so that the kid has better executive functioning and can navigate school well, but also because they want to be relating with their kid and having a great time with their kid as they're in their childhood years. And
I mean, they don't want to remind you to flush the toilet, you know, they don't want to remind you to get your stuff in your backpack. And both sides just get so frustrated with each other. And so it's so important to train somebody, and it's so teachable, right, over time, to get the brain to attend and alert differently so the actions can be different. Mm-hmm. You know, so
can you say that sentence again, please?
Yeah, it's so important to understand that you can learn to attend, the brain can attend so that the actions can be different, so that you can learn a different way. But it takes time. It's not an overnight process. And we totally get when somebody can't do algebra and we give them time to learn it, but God forbid we have attention, executive function, or social skills is another big area, right? And so many of our kids with in this kind of area struggle there too. We think it should be learned quickly. Right. Right. And it's just not that way if it's not an innate process. And yes, some kids really, when they're actually taught it, when their brain is alert, absolutely it can be something that happens. I mean, I have the privilege of using tools that get the brain online in a relatively quick manner, in a way that's really pleasant and really helps the brain stay that way, be stable over time. Those are lasting changes. So when you pair it with instruction, wow, a lot of good things happen. But these things require repetition, reinforcement.
It patience also and compassion.
And parents need support in using the language that facilitates the executive functioning learning. And that's just a process, right? Like, it's all about learning, right? I know there's an emotional piece, like the frustration is there. But when we really say, okay, this is the brain isn't working the way that it should. What skills do we need to learn? What skills does he or she need to learn? And what do I need to do to facilitate that? You can really expedite the process of executive functioning by using verbiage the same verbiage, right? The things that people say that support it. Really, really helpful. Because again, learning, learning, learning. This is not okay. Purposeful.
I really want to recap part of what you said. Sure. You're saying so much. I want to like dive so much into you. We could probably talk for hours.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you said that's really important to me is that I talk a lot about shame, and I talk about willfulness, and that we shame kids because we think it's a matter of willfulness, that they're just not trying hard enough. They just don't care. If they would only work harder, you know, and what you're saying is like with algebra, if somebody's struggling with algebra, we don't say you're just not trying hard enough. We say, okay, let's figure out why. Mm-hmm. And I want to put out a couple of other things. If somebody has a food allergy, we don't say you just need to try harder to eat that food.
Eat those peanuts. You'll be fine. You know what I mean?
If somebody can't see and they need glasses, we don't say just try to focus harder. So there are these things that we know are not a matter of willfulness, but when it comes to executive function, the story that we have been saying for decades in our culture is that the kid is just not trying, they're being lazy, they're not motivated, they need to work harder, whatever. But you're saying this is legit, there are legitimate struggles here. And when we do that, and then you mentioned languaging, and when we use certain verbiage and language and ways of communicating, then we can approach the, and that's the whole purpose of this whole conference. How can we approach these things differently to help deal with what's beneath the iceberg so that these kids can really get what they can out of education and life and have a great future?
Thrive, right? So they can thrive. Because, I mean, but yes, we wind up thinking, you know, the patterns with executive functioning and attention, right? And it's not, there's an overlap, but they are discrete functions, right? So, but the pattern is the belief that, you know, you see them sometimes being really locked on with attention, right? Because what happens with the brain is when there is a real stimulation, when there's a high interest.
And I would say engagement. Yep, same.
Engagement, yep. High interest. The brain actually hyperlocks. And that person with an executive functioning or attention issue actually can excel. They can just be like a rock star.
Interest areas, yeah. Video games,
right.
Social things they're into,
yeah.
Sports right. Activities they're into. And it makes it look like, oh, well
they can pay attention over here, but from a brain perspective, because I'm the brain lady, is my 8-year-old told me I need a license plate that said brain lady. And I was like, you know what, Giancarlo? I think you have a point. I love kids and what they say. They're so funny. So, but what happens is that, you know, when you are, you know, attending, you know, you're getting this information, and it's, you're so hyper locked and focused, but when it's boring, the brain is understimulated. It's not a willfulness. They lack the cognitive persistence to be able to push through. And I always use the example of us as adults. So any professional has to attend a professional conference. We all know when it's a fabulous conference, oh my gosh, you could like eat and breathe it. But unfortunately, not all professional conferences are. And so sometimes it's interesting and sometimes it's not. But if we have to get CEUs, for those of us with normal attention, we do what we have to do to stay focused. This is not what happens in an ADD brain. It is literally going to switch off and look for something else. That doesn't mean a person can't learn skills to be more attentive. It is a process that is not innate to them. And that's where that learning has to occur.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm so glad you talk about the shame part of things, because most people with ADHD of all ages, children and adults, they have anxiety too, because this is so stressful for them. They want to be attentive. They want to do this, and their brain is really struggling. And yet there's all the shame around it because, you know, parents are really trying to do the best they can. I mean, I even have teachers shaming kids in this day and age, which is just shocking to me.
Well, they don't know, and they're well-intended. They're doing the best they can. They're often replaying things that they've learned or in their culture or their family systems or their schools or whatever. So, you know, the stuff is so deeply ingrained in us. We do what was modeled for us, and shame is something that we've learned you know, if somebody's not doing something, shame them right. So that they take action.
And it's why schools still use, you know, the red light, the yellow light, and the green light. I mean, that's a negative reinforcement system. We already know through research that that doesn't support behavioral change, but schools do that and teachers do that because they think, well, you know, discipline's going to be the way to correct it. But what right. learning occurs when you constantly put somebody right. on a red?
And punishment, nothing. We think, punishment. You know, we're in a very... You know, we think that the punishment's going to change the behavior, but the people who are getting punished continue to get punished over and over and over, year after year after year, because it does not address what's underneath the tip of the ice. It does not change behavior. Before we go further, I want to frame this section that we're in of the interview. So for everybody that's watching, I have a sort of a structure that I somewhat follow, but we can get back to this. And I want to get to the anxiety today too. Mm-hmm. But to frame this part of it, and what we're really doing, everybody, is we're diving into a lot of the problems first, and then we'll dive into a lot of the solutions. But I wanted to ask a frame that I've been using with every speaker, which is, what is your point A and point B? So when you have a family or a student and they're at point A and they're struggling, and then they get to point B and everybody can breathe a sigh of relief and say, well, it's not perfect, but we've turned the corner. What, mm-hmm. how do you, and I know that mm-hmm. there's so many layers of this, because there's the anxiety piece you mentioned, mm-hmm. the relational piece you mentioned, the attentional piece you mentioned, but how do you, and you can tell us a story here if you want about a client who's been at point A and you've been able to change the corner. So what does that look like, your A to B?
So you're going to laugh because I use my hands and I do this with every client. So I have a point A, I have a point B, and I have a point C.
You and I are definitely right there. Different words for the same.
I know. And I'm a hand talker. And I have a client yesterday that she gets seizures from rapid hand movements. So I have to sit on my hands when I talk to her, because that's my Italian way. So, and when I'm driving, I talk with my hands because I'm on my phone in my Bluetooth. But anyway, so my pointy A is the same, right? Everybody's coming here and there's a stress point. There's a pain point. Do I get people who are really being proactive? I actually do, because we use holistic methodologies, you know. So like I'll give you a great example of somebody who I was like, here's our A, here's where we're at, here's where we're going. When we get here, we're going to shift into the learning part of things, and then we're going to get to C. So I had somebody who was a second generation case of ADHD, and which I love, but sometimes it's a mom and a dad. And sometimes the one parent is the person with ADD and the other isn't. And it's often the one that isn't who's driving the, say, you know, I need treatment, I need support. Well, this was really cool. This was the dad saying, I got ADD, I had a rough life, I'm super smart, and I don't want that for my kid. And I was like, awesome, because I love when I get that, because a lot of times, you know, ADD, our individuals are so smart, especially our parents, right, who have, you know, ADD themselves, and they're
and
so intelligent.
A lot
intelligent.
Of times people come to you and I after things have completely fallen apart. Like a lot of times I get in
apart.
Middle school,
falling apart.
In middle school, when there's no more hand-holding, things off and just go boom.
And it's not just middle school, because...
No, but that's just when I get them a lot. It's like when
and I get a lot of college kids. We had to do a whole program called Failure to Launch.
And
know,
I don't want to detract from the story. So,
but yeah, it can happen at any point. So what happened was, this was a very young boy. And I just so you know, I changed the details to protect people's privacy. Okay. So, but this was a young boy, and what was their pain point? So intelligent, doing academically fine. Nobody could care less about this kid at school. Didn't have one friend. Not one friend. Hyper, moves a lot, hyperverbal, you know, just not taking the moment to calm down and connect. So wasn't connecting, right? So my, you know, pain point is rough, because the parents understand, not a friend. I could care less about the academics because the kid's doing fine. But what is the most important thing in the world? It's social connectedness, right? Being accepted. So if you're in a very early grade and you don't have friends, it's going to be rough. This is where we need to put a lot of intervention. So
can I reinforce that too?
Yeah. Yeah, no, reinforce it.
Every single presentation I do, my last slide, my last point is called the most important thing. And the most important thing is relationships. And I go my spiel about that. But you just affirm the most important
thing
is social connection.
Yeah. Your core, your emotional core it's what it's about. If you, because people come to me all the time and the grades are good and then they go to college and they flunk out. Okay. It's because they ignore. It's never too late. There's always a time to work on things. But I love that these parents were like, I don't care about anything else. I want my kid to be happy and I want them to be socially connected. And if you can't make kids socially connected, it's not going to be easy in a traditional schooling pathway. You know, it's just not. It's not. You can say whatever you want. I've been doing this for a million years. I know what it looks like. And so the core is important. So what I did is did neurofeedback. That's what the brain map showed me, that this child actually had severe ADD. Wasn't mild. It was actually quite severe.
So and they're point A, they have severe ADD and they're having ADD, real social problems.
Yeah, real social problems. So they were so unfocused, spent almost all their time daydreaming that they didn't connect. So what I needed to do was I needed to start making this boy's brain attentive. And I did that with neurofeedback once, and we do behavioral charting. So there's a whole part of all this. I'm not giving you every detail. And so once we see that, oh yeah, Roseanne, I'm seeing that Joey here is getting attentive, right? They're actually communicating on the same conversation. They're not bringing extraneous information. They're maybe calling on the first time, responding on the first call, not the sixth. The dad said six times is about the average that he would take to respond to me. So then, you know, we started to see it was three. Then we started to see we got it down. So somewhere in this process, point B is when I said, now's the time for the new learning. Because I'm going to waste my time with this level of severe ADD trying to teach at this point. So got their brain open. Parents are like rock star parents following through. And by the way, we discovered there was a gut issue, which was verified by a doctor. And so we were able to fix that, right? We want to look at the whole system. So, and it's a genetic ADD and a gut issue exacerbating it, making it from probably what would have been a moderate case of ADHD to severe. So get everything online. And then very young child. So what did we do? We did play-based therapy, parent education. And it's not just play-based therapy. It's really executive functioning, attentional training, and lots of support for the parents to how to attend and orient differently. And I gotta say, these parents were fantastic parents to begin with, as most parents are, and I think they were doing a really good job. This kid was so extreme in their inattentiveness, you know, probably like 96th, 97th percentile in terms of inattentiveness, that it was really hard. The child was obviously extraordinarily bright because the academics were fine. So my point C is not there yet because we just had point B, but this is a very common situation. Now we continue along in supporting the brain to be attentive, but now the learning's going to occur, not for just the parents, but the kid. And, you know, point C is, you know, all the exciting things start to happen. I want to see in this B to C range, when we get back to school, because we're on break, I want to hear that there's friends. I want to hear that there's invites for birthday parties. You know, that's one of the most significant questions I ask. You know, is your kid getting invited to things? Mm-hmm. So we need that. And then we also made a plan for the social part as well at home, and how the parents, I like to call it a parent whisperer, how the parents can be there to support and teach that skill. Because executive functioning, social skills, again, people think that they just magically happen. They don't. For people where it's hard, it doesn't matter what your weakness is. If there's a weakness, math, social, whatever it is, learning to read, you got to be directly taught her. It's just not going to magically happen.
So to unpack the problem even a little bit more, what are some of the things that hold these kids back from developing the executive function that would help them really navigate more effectively? So what holds them back?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a whole onion right there, right? You know, so for me, there's the brain part, the body part, there's the family systems part, there's the educational part, and then like it's the what skills do you have, right? So I always start with the basis, right? The foundation for me is, you know, what's happening in the brain and the body. That's the first part, right? Obviously, if you have a glaring issue, you can jump that, you can put the cart before the horse. If you know, oh my gosh, this is a terrible education setting, which thankfully doesn't happen all the time, but it definitely happens, right?
Where there's, you know, just a huge misalignment.
Huge misalignment.
School approaches.
Yeah. Like, you know, how many kids have I had that have sensory needs that are totally beautiful children? I mean, they're all beautiful children, but like not out of control behaviorally, but just maybe needs to stand up, take breaks, and is 100% on the money if they have those things, but they're in an educational environment where that's not permitted. So then that kid gets persecuted, mm-hmm. and learning can't happen and their executive functioning goes down. So that's, you know, that's not a terribly, terribly unusual thing that happens, you know, and so then I march in.
What holds them back is one thing is like not looking at sort of those foundational things.
But, you know, from a brain perspective, what holds people back is, you know, is their brain working? Is that, are those frontal lobes working? Is there something that's irritating the brain, like food allergies or nutrient deficiencies or illnesses like infectious disease, which is very, very common? You know, what's the foundation piece in that that could be holding people back? And, you know, also too, in the what's their skill set and how are we teaching them in that overlap, what is that person missing? You know, are these, you know, some kids don't see the forest through the trees. I mean, it just happens. And so then they're constantly over-focusing on a detail and they're not putting anything together. And you can't live like that. You eventually really have to understand where things are connected. So you might have a young kid who's really great at just giving lots of information, but as time moves on, there's a demand to frame that appropriately and give a gist response. And some people just aren't oriented to that way, but they could be if they were taught that.
Right.
You know, so I'm all, you know, we're on the same page. We believe skills can be taught. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
You know,
and some kids pick up on them so quickly and
so quick,
and it can make it look like, again, like this kid must not be trying and that's missing what's really going on.
Some kids need more direct instruction in certain mm-hmm. areas. It's just that mm-hmm. way. End of story. Yep. We all know that as parents, you know, I'm not sure why educators don't always know that.
It's interesting because, yeah, educators are in the business of teaching, yet we don't teach kids how they learn.
Mm-hmm.
Subject areas, right?
Right.
Don't teach executive function. We don't teach planning. We hand 1,000 kids the exact same planner that we have bound for the school. You know, we don't teach we say you all need a 3-ring binder, but we don't mm-hmm. teach. I'm not a fan of 3-ring binders, by the way.
Yeah.
But we don't teach this massive skill of organizing loads of papers. And kids who are highly organized, well, they can get a quick lesson or watch how somebody else does it and figure it out.
Well said.
Not the kids I get.
No, absolutely.
What are some common mistakes parents make, and what's a common mistake you see teachers making with these families that you're working with?
I think the common mistake that parents make, the most common, is they go to their pediatrician, they ask for help, and the medical model is a pill is going to fix it. And a pediatrician should be referring to somebody who specializes in ADD, executive functioning, autism, whatever is the nexus that those executive functioning issues are coming from. And I think that's the biggest fallacy. And I get there's a trust in there. And now, again, people are realizing, you know, my pediatricians are just going to write me a script.
Yeah.
And it didn't work for his sister. Maybe I should be thinking about something different. So I think that's the biggest issue.
Okay.
Really to find an expert in that area that your child is.
And again, the pediatrician's well-intended.
Well-intended.
That's how they were trained.
That's how they were trained. And some of my best referrers are pediatricians. They were not easy to convince. You know, sometimes, I mean, I have one of my best referrers, it took her about 7 or 8 years. And she called me in one day and she said, I want you to come in and bring your neurofeedback equipment. And I said, okay. And she goes, well, I had to change my mind because I had so many people coming in here where you literally reversed their issues. Mm. And I was like, okay. She grilled me. She wanted to know this research study and that research study. And I said, bring it on. Because yep, I'm good with that.
She should be skeptical.
She should. As
we should be skeptical of everything and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Follow the research. Yeah. Follow the research. Follow your instinct.
Yep.
So I think that's one of the biggest issues that I see with parents is their intuitive self says this isn't working, right? And they're not making a different choice. The other flip side of that is parents need to have patience. So if you are committing to something that you believe works and the provider says, hey, you know, we got to give this 6 months, whatever it is, have the patience. Mm. Instead of saying, when will this work? Say, what else can I do to support this?
And again, that is so hard in our culture, which is such a, you know, yeah. We want things so quick. And, you know, you take Ritalin and sometimes the day that a student gets on that or within minutes, you can see a difference. And I have seen meds be a total positive game changer for kids. And I've seen them be really the kid doesn't like how it feels and they're struggling to balance things. But you can see if the very first day a kid takes something, you can see a difference. And well, neurofeedback, it's not like that. And we want a quick fix. And we have to understand that just like if I want to mm-hmm. work out and start building muscle or something,
it's not going to happen one day.
It is right. Absolutely. It's not going to happen a week or 3 weeks right. or four, maybe after 6 weeks, you know, you start.
Absolutely. And you know, I do
invisible gains.
No, definitely. And I definitely use treatments that are more immediate, and neurofeedback can be very quick for people. Depends on their intensity and how frequently they're coming.
But it's not the same, and people do have to be patient. And you're saying that's
a mistake. They do have to be patient.
People want things so fast. And
it doesn't, if you're going to a therapist to learn coping strategies, you're not going to come one time. I recently had somebody get very upset because they came 2 times to parenting work and said, we're extremely disappointed. We thought we would have more in our toolkit. And it was like 2 times was just
the intake.
Stuff
takes work. And I think for a lot of us adults, a lot of human beings, it is very hard to do the work because a lot of times it's a mirror back to things about ourselves that we have to look at that are difficult to look at. They're not the end of the world, but we've got junk, you know, and it's okay.
Everybody's got junk.
Everybody's got it.
But we
want to act like, you know, our culture is like, no, everything's perfect.
Everything's great.
You know, it looks good on the outside. You know, and it's like, no, we're human.
But I also think that people are afraid of work because they've tried a lot of things that don't work.
Yeah.
And so
they don't want to spin their wheels.
How is this thing going to be different? And I think what you need to do, again, it goes back to, you know, really trusting your gut, investigating, finding an expert. You know, if you go to a child psychologist's office and there is not toys on the floor, run.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like, if you're working with kids, you better know kids and you better know, have that expertise in that language. So, you know, how do you find these people? You ask a trusted friend, you know, you do get on the internet and maybe you are working with somebody remotely and you interview them, you know, you schedule an appointment to interview them. But you know, find information and see what works best for you. Don't be afraid that just because I think so many people come to me because I am the last stop on the train. I'm sometimes the first stop, but a lot of times they've tried a lot of things. So, you know, with ADD medication, the research is very clear that after 3 years, it virtually stops working for people. Most people have to then move on and try a different medication. And 100% of people have an adverse reaction to ADD medication, with the top three being food restricting, irritability, and insomnia. So it's not 100% this easy, you know, process. Yes, people can be attentive, but eventually within 6 months, typically one of these side effects, 100% of people have a side effect. So it becomes this what's the lesser evil. And that's not easy. So, mm-hmm. But, and it doesn't replace the skill, learning mm-hmm. the skill, mm-hmm. no matter what you get the brain. And we have homeopathic, we have supplements, we have amazing tools now that are as effective as the medications without any of the side effects. So there's a lot to consider. And I think you always should find a practitioner that has expertise and knowledge and is open to different things. So I couldn't be more open, but I always follow the research.
Okay. Now this is not neurofeedback. I have done before, but is not my area of expertise at all. My approach is very different. I'm doing coaching, and I'm usually working with middle, high school, and college kids. And I think you probably do more young kids, but I think you go through college.
No. We really have all ages.
Right. But you probably do more young kids than I do.
Then you do. Yes. But but we have a lot.
95% of my practice would be middle, high school, and college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
people are feeling the effects of executive functioning and ADD way younger, because kindergarten is no longer just sitting and having fun and relationships. There's a real expectation to sit down and do work.
Especially in the Northeast, huh?
Wow. I mean, most of my kindergartners get one recess a day between 15 and 20 minutes. Yeah. Totally developmentally inappropriate.
Yeah.
So just a rise, you know, it's not unusual for me to have a 3 or 4 or 5 year old. And in mental health, less than 5% of practitioners work with kids.
What story are we telling to?
I mean, it's unbelievable.
And I don't want to get into that though.
Yeah. No, but go on to the next part.
Let's move in now into solutions. So at this point, we'll start wrapping up. And I want parents, you know, these are parents who executive function is really new to them, to walk away saying, here are actions I can take, here are things I can do. So you got this kid at point A, you're taking them to point C in your case. What actions do you do? Do you do an assessment, the neurofeedback, other things, referrals out, who, why? And as you're telling, you know, what should the parents, if they don't have the privilege of working with you or live in your area or get you online, what can they be doing similar to how you would take them through a process?
Yeah. And I'm going to say that, you know, we're going to be offering courses so that will be easy for parents to get in this process. So, you know, what's the first step that I do when people come to my center is, you know, they do a QEEG brain map that gives us some clear ideas about how the brain is functioning. And what that does is, you know, you put this cap on and measures surface electrical activity of the brain, and I can see the health of the brain. And so from there, I'm able to make a wide variety of treatment recommendations, things that are in our center, things that are not in our center. I believe in a lot of different types of treatments and therapies. And even though we do a variety, my job is to recommend what is best for that individual. And because of the complexity of what's happening, people have nutrient deficiencies, poor food quality, genetic mutations, so many things are going on. Everything really is bio-individual. But in the framework of that, you come in for a brain map. Let's say somebody decides to do neurofeedback. And you know, what is neurofeedback? Neurofeedback is just this wonderful way to jump into the subconscious, which I know you love to talk to. And it's a way to reinforce the brain for producing a healthy combination of brain waves that reduce symptoms. So your brain is stuck in a frequency that causes you to be very inattentive, maybe irritable, a daydreamer, can't hear directions properly. What I'm going to do is I'm going to reinforce it to produce a healthy combination that changes it, that switches it to this level, changes its homeostasis so that it produces lasting changes for you to be consistently focused all the time and your brain doesn't go back to that set point and then it continues to move forward.
So neurofeedback helps change the brain wave patterns, right? And when I honestly don't know, when you say brain waves, that I know that there are waves for the, what are they, alpha, beta, delta, and theta?
Yeah, so delta, Theta, alpha, and beta. There's different kinds of beta, but those are our main ones.
Are those waves measured by, is it literally electrical yes. waves?
Yes, okay. We're measuring the surface electrical activity of the brain. And what happens is when somebody does neurofeedback, they're hooked to a computer. There's nothing coming through the computer. It's just measuring and reinforcing, measuring and reinforcing.
So it's measuring the electrical brainwave wave activity. And what, yep.
and
what
reinforcing
type of wave it is. Yes. So yep. what, and the brain does different things in different ways. Like in,
yes.
what's the sleep one?
Delta.
Okay. So when you're sleeping, your brain is in delta waves generally. Okay.
Yep.
And so we're working with getting them, training the brain through neurofeedback yep. to get into waves that are more attentive.
Right. So for example, classic unfocused executive functioning would be that you would have too many unfocused brain waves, delta and theta, out during the day. You don't want a sleep brain wave out during the day, but many people with ADD have that. And then they don't have enough power. They don't have enough beta. So I say, okay, I'm going to reinforce you to push down that unfocused brain wave, increase the positive brain wave. So when you're hooked to the computer, it provides multiple forms of reinforcement to the subconscious. Within 2 to 3 seconds from the first time you're hooked up, your brain produces a healthy combination. The problem is, just like exercising, you're building a muscle. That doesn't happen in one time. Right. It happens over a series.
Of course. Because so, it's neural connections that are going yeah. on. But
and your brain always wants to go back to its set point, whether it's healthy or not. It just loves that cozy response. So it needs to be coaxed.
So you're giving a client more and more and more experiences of getting it yes. into that waves.
Yep.
And I think you're using, or is it always using videos that they're yeah. watching?
So, yes and no. So typically what we use is a movie. Most people, I'd say 98% of our people, they watch a movie. The movie won't play. There's nothing coming from the movie. The movie is the reinforcement. So if they don't produce a healthy combination, which again happens with everybody, as long as you're looking at the screen in 2 to 3 seconds, you don't have to believe neurofeedback. You don't have to like it. It just reinforces at a subconscious level.
So the brain, it's reading, you have the probes, it's mm-hmm. reading. Yeah. And they're not going through the skull or anything.
They're not going through the skull, and they're easy. It's not a big deal. And then there's other forms of reinforcement.
It's fun.
Visuals. It's actually very fun. So we do different kinds of neurofeedback, but what I'm talking about is EEG neurofeedback. It's the most common one that I use.
Okay. So they're watching. It's helping the brain get to certain waves. They leave yeah. your office. Their brain has just had an experience where they've been able to get into the attentional
focus brain waves
more
yes.
easily throughout mm-hmm. the week or whenever before they mm-hmm. see you again. It's going to more easily yeah. go to that place. They see you again. It gets really reinforced, and hopefully
exactly.
after a period of weeks or months,
it really gets
to a place yeah. where people can sit into a place where they can attend for a while. And I'm being so in depth about this, Dr. Roseanne, because I want people to hear that executive function is, there's another speaker who talks about self-regulation a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Executive function.
I love self-regulation. So yeah.
And it's all, you know,
this is what it is. The brain isn't self-regulating. So I teach it
right.
to regulate and create this healthy response. It's just, that most, you know, when we do neurofeedback, it's 2 to 3 times a week. Some people do intensives. Sometimes I literally will see people twice a day for 10 days. Sometimes it's 4 or 5. It all depends on what everybody's needs are.
But you're trying to cross the threshold where the brain can attend or regulate so that you can focus on the things that matter and get things done that matter so that in the long term, you can have a great future, be able to have go for your choices. And the risk of this is that if people cannot figure this out, and this is why I'm so yeah. passionate about it, because I was on that track. If you cannot figure it out, it's literally a quality of life issue.
Quality of life. You're not able to achieve. Now, don't get me wrong. Some of the most successful people I know have raging ADD, but they figured out the thing they needed to get to that level, right? So they had, you know, a strategy, a trick, whatever
yeah.
it was. And also, you know, being that I've been doing this for almost 30 years and I'm a trained school psychologist, and, you know, up until last week I was doing, or 2 weeks ago, I was doing school observations. I'm there. I'm in the trenches. What the developmental expectations are of children are ridiculous. And so
I talk about what we pile on their plates. It's really so disturbing to watch.
They can't make it through. So parents are like, well, you know, again, I mentioned earlier, I made it through. They can make it through. Not in today. It's very, very difficult because so many of our ADD kids are so smart and they can talk, give an answer about the content, right? But they can't explain the process. And our education system with Common Core is moved to process. And they're not explaining the process to the kids, but they expect the kids to explain the process. And so they're just floundering in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So we have to, what I love about neurofeedback is, you know, it gets you attentive. The changes are lasting. When you look at research, 6 months, 1 year, 3 years, and 10 years later, not only are those changes sustained, the brain is typically better than when you stop. So it's a lovely way. It's very pleasant. It's very easy. I've had two people in a bazillion years resist it. Both of those were behavioral. We still did it. We made our chart. We contracted them to earn something. And most people really look forward to it. My teenagers, my college kids crave it, you know, because it really gets you very focused and in a pleasant, enjoyable way, not that jacked up way that the meds do for most people. It's a calm focus that you can really attend to the information that's coming to you. You can self-regulate. You know, ADD components, executive functioning components look so different. One person may have more of an emotional flavor. One may have more of inattentive. One may be auditory processing. It's just so different. And so what I love is it gets the brain to regulate, and whatever those difficulties are, start to tamp down, and then you teach the skills.
Now talk about that. What is teaching skills look like?
Yeah. So, you know, what's going on? Is there a family systems component? Do we need to reteach how the parents are parenting? Again, parents are never bad parents. It's just kids need different things from us. And, you know, we're trained mental health professionals. We have the training. You know, parents aren't trained to deal with a kid who's always crabby. Like, I mean, that happens sometimes, you know.
So what's a skill, for example, parents need to deal with a crabby kid?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the common things that happens with crabby kids is a lot of arguing, right? A lot of back and forth and bickering. So how to reframe conversations to not engage in the bickering, and also to put back some independence on them. Because a lot of this bickering, you know, I have a lot of kids with sensory issues. There's no rational way to deal with sensory issues. So, you know, what's going to work for that kid? Do we know, you know, my kid has sensory issues from Lyme disease. And so I don't even mess around. I buy him his exact same socks. I have a backup set of socks in the car, two backup sets, just in case things go wrong, because that was a major stumbling block to get out of the morning. And that's what works. So when there's tears that happen because the socks don't feel right, I say, what can you do? What can you do right now? Okay,
so,
I got
so you're talking about so part of the skill with parents is like the responsibility, which I call buy-in and ownership. Saying it sounds like same thing. Like, we want to get the kid involved, them to be responsible in the solution, the conversation. And then with the skills for kids, once they've done some neurofeedback, what skills are you teaching kids?
Well, it all depends on what their deficits are. So if there's executive functioning, we try to use a brain-based approach to executive functioning and really teach them how to orient. We're not necessarily doing what you do in that it's the direct academic component. We're actually trying to get them to future think, to start to see the
big
picture.
Let's talk about that. What's orient and what's future think?
Yeah. So perfect example of what does somebody look like with a good executive functioning and somebody who doesn't have good executive functioning. So good executive functioning, when you go to the grocery store, you already know what you're going to make. Maybe you have a few things picked out you're going to make for the week, but you have thought about the grocery store differently than somebody without executive functioning. You're going to organize your list by the aisles. You are visualizing what's there. Somebody with poor executive functioning has no idea okay, yeah, I didn't think about I'm making steak and I'm making this. And so they go to the grocery store. They're running around. They probably don't have a list. Maybe they have a list. Maybe it's not organized. And they walk out of there and they're like, oh my gosh, I like went in to get cleaner.
You're describing my girlfriend and I. She goes in with a list. She thinks it through. She looks around.
Yeah.
Figures out what she needs. And she's like, you don't have a list? I'm like,
yeah.
I walk into the store. I just go get stuff. That's what I do. Isn't I don't go funny? Grocery shopping. I buy stuff.
You buy stuff. You're like, ooh, this looks good. Then you don't have anything that can make anything together.
I do okay meeting. Now.
Okay. You're all right. Okay.
I have good compensatory strategies.
I love it.
The groceries I need.
So with kids, what we do is we get them to start to orient differently because now they've reused their parents as a crutch, right? Like my mom's going to tell me I'm going to the baseball game. So then I'll worry about, you know, my mom's going to bark the orders of the things that I need to do. Mm-hmm. They don't even get. So it's a lot of that. And then we work with the parents to use different verbiage because again, it needs reinforcement and practice. And a lot. And I love to tell parents that it takes 34 times of doing something to master it. For somebody with an attention or learning problem, it typically takes 3 times the amount. So when they say I've said 100 times, I'm like, yeah, guess what? That's what they need.
Yes.
Sorry. But when we
really, or a couple hundred more.
A couple hundred. And the consistency of the verbiage, the language helps with learning. It's so important. So
I want to mention at this point, Dr. Roseanne, that when we're helping parents to communicate in these sorts of ways, what often happens with parents is that there's an emotional tinge and anxiety in the parent's voice or an anger in the parent's voice. And that when that happens, we are co-regulating with the kid. We're sending, our nervous system is sending a message to the kid that there's this anxiety and fear. And our child is either going to respond with their own anxiety, defensiveness, or withdraw and shut down. Either way, we're missing the boat in terms of the opportunity for clear communication.
Sure.
So we want to get as regulated as we can as adults. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're imperfect. We're allowed to, but we do want to be conscious of that. And when we're communicating, try to regulate.
So important, not always easy, but I think when you really change your mindset that this is a learning issue and you use consistent verbiage, it really becomes a lot easier. I promise you that, you know. And I think so much of our emotional response as parents isn't even just the immediate frustration. It's the catastrophizing. Mm-hmm. It's that my kid's going to never make it in college. Mm-hmm. He's going to live in my basement. He's going to this. He's going to that. And you know, I get it. But we can't go there. We need to say, these are skills. Like I'm the hope bringer, right? You know, we call our office staff hope ambassadors because yes, you can change the path. You can change trajectory. There are steps and things you need to do and you have to have consistency and patience and you absolutely can improve because, you know, when you do get a kid that's, you know, or even a young adult that's just so, their heart is hurt by this, so damaged. It's hard. You know, depression can be there, other psychological factors that are not organic that have happened out of frustration. Not, again, impossible to work with. It's just harder. You know, you just got a lot more layers.
So what is one of the most common verbiage sentences or words or phrases that you find yourself saying to parents a lot? Try saying this.
I actually very frequently say, what do you think we should do? Or, you know, what do you think next? Yeah.
That is one of my favorites. That exact thing.
Okay. We didn't even plan it. Yeah. What do you think?
And I always have to say, now this is not condescending. I'm like, not like, what do you think? But it's like,
yeah.
Mom, can I do this?
Yeah.
What do you think?
And you know, if they get stuck and they're frustrated, you could say like, maybe we should like, what do you think? Should we like get the garbage bag or do you think we should get a bag? Like, and give them a choice. Like, because, excuse me, it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, they're so used to you telling them what they're supposed to think. And
they've been trained to just wait for the answer, you know? And again, parents are not doing bad things. They're just trying to survive, you know? Like, I had somebody come in. They have 7 kids. God bless them. And, you know, there's the one. There's mm-hmm. the one. And, you know, their whole family is dictated by this one. And I get it. And they're so loving. They're so sweet. But, you know, I was like, we got to do some parent training here. They're like, we so need help. I'm like, you can do it. You got it. You raised 7 kids and only one of them's kind of got something going on. We got it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, just get it back, getting them to verbiage. And again, that requires patience. I'm not saying this stuff is easy, right?
Right.
But I find it a lot less stressful than screaming and repeating myself and just those dialogues that happen, and they get empowered and you get empowered. So, and over time, that they'll, when you ask the question, you'll actually get a response. And what over the goal time. Is,
because they're not used to it.
Them. They're not used to it. Not too used to it.
So parents, write down right now on a sticky note, what do you think, and put it up somewhere where you're going to remember to ask that question a million times.
And now, when you start, you might need to give 2 choices. And then
I call those false choices, because there might be 50, but they sometimes just need a structure. Just give them
structure,
but don't give them none, because they need to feel a sense of ownership.
Definitely.
So, all right. So now I'm going to back up a little bit and then we'll start wrapping up. But I want to back up to when you're doing neurofeedback and you're at this point where you're really trying to get the brain ready to accept skills or strategies or teaching. So at that point, for parents who don't have access to neurofeedback or biofeedback, or they don't know anyone in their area or whatever, are there things that they can do
100%.
That are neurofeedback-ish that is a good little hack for them to at least get started and take action today?
Yeah. So, you know, what can you do to actually change your brain? So I typically don't do neurofeedback in isolation. So, but there are things you can do. Meditation being one, biofeedback, there are home devices called HeartMath. You can get the HeartMath Lightning. It's for Android and Apple technology.
I have the HeartMath device.
Good stuff.
I have the one from a few years back. I use it with kids all the time. I meditate myself with kids all the time. Awesome.
And meditation, 40 days of 10 minutes or more of meditation creates permanent brain change. Again, 40 days of 10 minutes or more of meditation creates permanent brain change. You can use apps like Headspace, Calm, and Insight Timer.
Insight Timer
is free. Mm-hmm. And I always suggest that you use start with the sleep ones, because they're the easiest ones. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about what can you do to improve brain health, there's lots and lots and lots of things you can do. They often involve lifestyle changes. And when I say lifestyle changes, the best way to do them is to take the family to partake in them. So one of the first things you can do is change what you put in your mouth, and it has a huge impact on your brain. So, you know, eating an anti-inflammatory diet, that's all stuff you can do. You can Google that. You can do that. And even if you make 25% change, you're going to have 25% change in your brain and your body. Mm-hmm. So little changes add up, and you can work with a naturopath or a functional MD, and you can look at nutrient deficiencies. You can look at irritants. There are a lot of things that impact focus. It's not unusual for somebody to, again, in that case with somebody who had ADD, they had a gut issue. So there was a ongoing gut permeability, and actually protein was leaking out. I could see it on their brain map, and the protein was empowering their brain. So we're able to reverse that with the help of a naturopath. And in other states, naturopaths aren't licensed everywhere. You can go to a functional MD or a chiropractor or sometimes an acupuncturist. Sleep. Regular sleep is critical for brain health. It is not a valued part of our American culture. And a lot of times kids with executive functioning and ADD have overstimulated brains because they're overworking and they can't get to sleep. So reducing devices, adding magnesium, different things can be incredibly, incredibly helpful. You know, regular exercise. And you can find providers for neurofeedback are all over the world. You can go to BCIA.org and you can find a board certified neurofeedback provider. BCN would be next to their name. It's a great way to get the brain, you know, working in such a pleasant and easy way. And it is incredibly research-based and highly effective. So it's something obviously I do and I'm passionate about. But, you know, those are other things that you can do. And I often, you know, have my clients use those tools and in conjunction with what we're doing. And there's lots of supplements. I'll have some things that my blogs that I've written, there's lots of supplements that can be helpful for brain health that are accessible to anybody, you know.
And I got two more.
Sure.
What specific action or actions can parents take this week to get started helping their child with your approaches or your insights or your philosophy?
Yeah. I think one specific thing you could start doing is adding a smoothie to your diet every day. And your smoothie should be dairy-free and wheat free. And my favorite smoothies are, and why would you add smoothies? There's a lot of nutrients and protein to power the brain so that we can be attentive. And when you have a focus issue, you should absolutely the maximum length of time you should go without having protein is 4 hours, and you would have a non-dairy piece of protein, like a, you know, chicken or beef jerky or nuts. But my smoothie, coconut or almond milk, spinach or kale, banana, frozen fruit, whatever it is that you like that is tasty to you. You can also put in a vegan protein in there as well. And I always do vegan organic and or nut butters to add it in. And it's a great way to power up the brain and give
a lot of the
good
food
nutrition.
We eat just is void of nutrients. It's
void of nutrients. Yeah.
Food-like substances. It's
yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of nutrients in bread. You know, people want to think there is, but you need protein, you need fat, and you need fruits and vegetables. That's where the nutrients are. You know, kids will eat it. My kids, you know, my youngest has never had wheat. he is the most amazing eater. Like, they're literally, he's like, most adults don't eat like he does. He's so incredible and what he chooses. So he didn't know another way. And I get it and I respect it. Some of my peeps, their kids eat 20 things. So you got to work with what you got. But, you know, I found that probably 98% of people are open to a smoothie. So it's a great way to power pack in some nutrition. So that's one thing to do, you know, right away. And most kids are not getting enough fat in their diet. So adding, you know, avocado, nuts, eggs, hummus, smoked salmon, coconut and almond products are great ways to help because, you know, the when increased fat, when you reduce sugar and grains is a great way to get the electrical system working in the brain. And then I think the other thing parents can do is just to ask the question, you know, what do you think we should do? Just to get them to orient differently and give power back. And it stops, breaks the arguing cycle. It's really, really helpful.
Okay, awesome. And then the final question. From your heart directly to their heart, what's the most important takeaway you want parents to leave with right now?
You know, I want parents to know probably, you know, two things that overlap. One is that there's always hope. And if you feel very frustrated that your kid isn't moving in the direction that they want, you just haven't had the right provider to help you guide you and really go to an expert, which leads to my next thing is, you know, trust your gut. I mean, we're so bombarding parents with this medical model. And I work with so many people that had, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 medication trials, and it's just not working. So, you know, listen to your gut, find an expert that works, and, you know, your child can thrive.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate your time, your expertise, your generosity.
Oh, thank you. This is so fun. I love what you're doing. And, you know, executive functioning is, this is a groundbreaking summit, right? Because this is the first time this has been done, and people don't, they're learning about what executive functioning is. And this is just a great way to get different. You'll see that we all have our own flavor. There's a common piece to it, an overlap. But it's so important to understand, because when you understand what happens in the brain, you can help your kid better.
Well, thank you so much. And parents, I hope you enjoyed this. And now go take some action. Have a great day.